Hello, and welcome to Leading Community Colleges in California, a podcast that goes in-depth with California's most effective leaders in higher education in the largest public sector of higher education in the United States, California Community Colleges. I'm your host, Larry Galizio, President and CEO of the Community College League of California. In this episode of Leading Community Colleges in California, we speak to Dr. Richard Miller, founding chair of the Coalition for Transformational Education and president emeritus of the Olin College of Engineering, and Dr. Keith Buffington, executive director of the Coalition for Transformational Education and professor of mechanical engineering emeritus and former dean of engineering at Bucknell University. Dr. Richard Miller and Dr. Keith Buffington of the Coalition for Transformational Education, thank you for being with us at Leading Community Colleges for California.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a real delight to see you.
And we are thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both. Are you okay with if we use first names?
Absolutely.
And Dr. Miller, you prefer Rick?
That's right. Please. Even the students don't call me anything other than Rick. So that's
okay. Great. All right. And Keith, I should call you Keith?
Absolutely.
Okay. So thank you for spending time. My presumption, and perhaps it's incorrect, but I believe that a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with the work of the Coalition for Transformational Education, or CTE. And my first question to whomever would like to begin to address that is if you could just describe the mission of the Coalition.
Yeah, so the mission of the Coalition is to bring together the learning community of institutions to what I would call raise the bar in higher ed, so that our primary goal is beyond increasing the retention rate and the graduation rate and the starting salaries, and to look at what happens to our alumni after they leave school 10, 20 years later. We need to turn around the perception that higher education doesn't do enough of that. And as a result, young people in college have mixed reactions and feelings, and the public is not at all convinced that higher education is a public good, which has caused a lot of us issues. So we think we can deal with that. And we think that it's going to take us working together as a community, from community colleges to Harvard to everything in between, to affect the value system in higher ed.
Keith, anything you'd like to add to that about the mission of the Coalition of
I think Rick described that well, but I think one of the things that we really would like to emphasize is that we're trying to reach out to all colleges and universities across the U.S., and in fact, we have international interest as well. That's why we're particularly excited to be here talking with you about the connection to community colleges. As Rick has said before, we have a lot to learn, but we have a lot to offer as well. And I think as we engage with others, we learn about the challenges in higher education at all levels, and we think deeply about how we can transform what's happening in higher education and really create a better experience for students while they are students, and of course, for the rest of their lives. That's really the long-term goal. You're trying to make higher education more of a vehicle. It already is, of course, for many, many students, but we're trying to make it more of a vehicle that can affect the students, certainly while they are students, but set them on a path for their lives, so that later in their lives, they're making good decisions for what really is important to them, really valuable to them, and what serves their needs and their hopes and aspirations.
Clearly, both of you are so engaged in this work and have been engaged in higher ed for decades. And clearly, you know, Rick, I know you've failed retirement miserably. I think you were president at Olin College for over two decades. So I learned about your work reading an article in Inside Higher Education, and I was very excited about the work. For those listeners who are not familiar with the Gallup-Purdue Survey Index, because that seemed like a foundational document for the work, could you talk a little bit about that and just talk about how the Coalition came together, kind of your origin story, so to speak?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So I've had this unusual journey in higher ed through several different universities, and the last stop has been at Olin College in Massachusetts, which is not well known. It's kind of a lab school that was funded by a private foundation to rethink what it means to be an engineer in this country and to rethink what it means to be educated, because there's a whole lot of anxiety about producing more STEM majors. Having done that for 21 years and doing some really unusual fundamental experiments, we kept getting letters from parents. What did you do to my child? We dropped them off 4 years ago. They were pretty good at math, but they were not sure what they were getting into and didn't really know what an engineer was. And you know, we hoped they would get a good education and get a job and not live in our basement and all this sort of thing. And now these shy kids are ready for the TED stage, literally, a number of them. I mean, one of them I'll just mention, because his school is quite small, is Francis Haugen. Francis Haugen was the whistleblower for Facebook that you all probably heard about.
Yes.
So she literally is on stage. This happened more than a few times. And I kept getting the feeling that something more than an engineering education was happening. What is it? Keith and I are both mechanical engineers, it turns out. And as much as I love thermodynamics, I don't think that was the key. It was the culture of learning and the experiments that we had done. And I kept getting needled by a president of a foundation who has been very supportive of us to take these lessons learned more broadly to higher education across the country. And I kept saying, no one would listen to me. I mean, I'm an engineer, right? Engineering is regarded as that that vocational program on campus. It's not really, you know, in the heart of the liberal arts, and having experienced that in some of the places that I worked before. He said, just try it. So he was pushing. And then we ran into the Gallup-Purdue data, which was really morally challenging. So what is this Gallup-Purdue data? Well, Gallup, as you may know, for decades, I think close to 100 years, has been monitoring well-being and wellness in society as a whole. They publish a list of happiest countries. People are probably aware of those, correlated around the globe, by using a set of metrics that has five basic dimensions to it. One of those dimensions is health, including physical and mental health. Another one has to do with financial well-being, which really means security in the sense of a place to live and to not being insecure for food or for healthcare, but also having social well-being, which basically has love in your life, someone who cares about you as a person, that you're secure at night, that if some crisis happened, they would be there. Another issue is social well-being, a relationship in a community beyond your family, engagement, civic engagement, I guess you could think of it that way. And the last one is having a sense of meaning and purpose, that what I do in life matters. It just doesn't just matter to me, it's bigger than self. Those are the five things. And they've been doing this for decades. Well, it turns out, not quite 10 years ago, Purdue University decided to use that set of metrics to measure how their own alumni at Purdue would rate their life on this scale of well-being, particularly as it relates to their undergraduate experiences in college. So this is a correlation study. It's not a causation study. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the results were really interesting. These were presented by a guy named Brandon Busteed, who now I think is pretty well known. He's at Kaplan. What did they find? They found two things jumped off the page. One of them was questions around the issue of someone cared about me as a person while I was a student were huge. The other one was I had an opportunity to apply what I learned in the real world context while I was still a student. Those two things, if students resonated with those and more than once in the survey identified them as characteristic of their undergraduate experience, the outcome was that they had life turned out to have double the well-being of other graduates who didn't have that experience. So as a factor of two increase in your well-being, which turns out to have a lot of knock-on effects. For example, it has a high correlation with engagement at work. So employers care about this. It also has a high correlation with a reduction in the absentee rate at work and a reduction in the cost of health insurance to the employer. And there's a whole bunch of things that you can just sort of imagine how this unfolds.
Sure.
So these are desirable things. So we decided, hey, you know, I'm a little bit disappointed they didn't say that STEM courses were at the top of the list and we should just, you know, have everybody be an engineer. But once I got over that, I realized that's really what's happening in this, what I'm calling transformational education process. So maybe we should listen to these people. In June of 2017, I called some friends, about a dozen other university presidents and provosts, and invited them to meet at Chicago O'Hare. And let's talk to Brandon Busteed, the guy from Gallup who put together the survey, and let's have him explain it to us. And because this is really social science research, and this can be complicated, we decided to have an independent guide through the day, which was Carol Dweck, a psychologist at Stanford, who's well known for her work in mindset. She came too. So we just went there and listened. There was a whole lot of head nodding that went on. Yes, of course, this makes really good sense. This really resonates with our experience too. And of course, it's happening on our campus, just like it is, you know, everywhere else. But then Brandon presented the sort of penultimate number in the survey. What percentage of the students in the country report that is characteristic of what they experienced as an undergraduate? And the number was 3%. We could do better. Let's put it that way. That was the impetus. So we decided, maybe there's more we could learn here. And we kept meeting about every 6 months. We had a series of guest speakers. Some really amazing work has been going on in this field. And we became convinced that we can and we must do better. We must, in fact, organize, create a learning community, identify projects that work at scale, because this is about all students. This is not about the talented and gifted students. This is not about the underrepresented students. This is about every student. We could raise the bar. And I think I'll leave it at that. And we could talk a lot longer, but you must now have a sense of what we do.
Yes. And so, Keith, you are the inaugural executive director of the coalition, correct?
That's correct, yes. I've had the great privilege of working with Rick on this project since about 2016. Rick and I have known each other and through a number of different things. We've been involved with the National Academy of Engineering's Grand Challenge Scholars Program. I think I first met Rick back in about 2011 when he was hosting a dinner at Olin about the Grand Challenges. And we've interacted in other ways in other programs, particularly the foundation he mentioned that is helping to provide some of our support. They do some other things around entrepreneurship and creating entrepreneurially minded students where Rick and I again interacted. And Rick was very generous in offering me the opportunity to go to Olin while I was on sabbatical from Bucknell University and spend a semester there working with his provost, then at the time, Vin Mano, and working with Rick and really engaging me in conversation about some of these issues. And as Rick was saying, it certainly has resonated with others, and it resonated with me as well. You know, interestingly enough, we, as Rick said, we are both engineers. But for me as an engineer, I've always sought out opportunities to engage in broader aspects of education and really broader aspects of what the world needs and what our students need in particular to be successful. You know, I'm at an institution where engineering is a relatively small part of the entire campus embedded in a liberal arts institution. And for me, that's really valuable and really powerful because it keeps me grounded for one, but it also connects me with these broader issues, broader societal issues. And I think I've always gravitated towards that. The entrepreneurial mindset work that I've done is, again, not centrally located in engineering. I've also done a lot of work here with management. And over time, I've taught more and interacted more with people beyond just that engineering sphere, because it is so important. It's incredibly important to engage students, whatever they're studying, and to connect with them. The things that Rick mentioned, the mentorship, for me, that's what every faculty member at every institution of any kind should be striving for. And I think the vast majority do. Some of us are more successful than others, but I think we want to connect with our students. We want to make the lives of our students better. The fact that the Gallup data was telling us that not every student, in fact, a small percentage of students are really getting high quality experiences in both mentorship and experiential learning means that we definitely can do so much better. And that's what initially excited me about working with Rick. As I said, we started in 2016. And since then, we've worked together ever more closely. I think you were mentioning before that Rick is failing miserably on his retirement. And I just retired as of July 31st, and I have a feeling I'm on the same trajectory. We'll see how that goes. But it's an incredibly rewarding way to spend my time, our time, the coalition's time with what we can really do for students.
Fantastic. Right. Engineers and engineering students are your neighbors. They are your friends. it's the public good of higher education. But that whole notion of engagement, there's so much discourse about how ironic it is with so-called social media, yet individuals, especially young people, are feeling more disconnected, not technologically disconnected, but without a mentor or feeling of engagement or all of those elements that help lead toward a happier, more fulfilling life. And that's what's so exciting, again, about the work that you do and how important higher education, it's not the sole factor, but it could be and should be. And the data show in some instances is central or essential or very useful to create the kind of outcomes, life outcomes. That's what's so exciting about the research too. It's not just, oh, what job did you get right out of Bucknell or Olin or Los Angeles Community College? It's longitudinal survey data that looks at people's life outcomes and life satisfactions. And that's what makes this so interesting. So can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the institutions that you're working with and some of the projects and where you are in the evolution of the Coalition for Transformational Education?
Yeah, and I think I can start a little bit with that. Certainly, as Rick said, he was able to bring together a core group of institutions from the beginning, and we've continued to expand since then. And in particular, very recently, we've gotten a lot of interest and attention from a variety of institutions. But that some of the institutions that are involved, it's really an eclectic group, and intentionally so. We are not trying to serve any one population of institutions. And that's, again, why we're particularly interested in community colleges, is because the world of higher education in the U.S. is very broad and very diverse. And we want to make sure that we at least touch as many parts of it as we possibly can. But the institutions that are involved, we have large state institutions, University of Connecticut, for example, University of Maine, also private institutions such as the University of Southern California. We have smaller schools. Bates is very, very involved. Bucknell, of course. Olin, of course. And we have other schools that maybe don't fit into the model of those schools quite as completely, such as the University of Michigan Dearborn. They serve a very diverse population, a very, very specific purpose, and we're thrilled to have them as part of the coalition because of all the insights that they bring. Other schools that are involved, Wake Forest University, for example, Belmont University, quite a wide range of institutions. And what we've tried to do is recognize that because the members of the coalition are so diverse in such different types of institutions, it's not really going to work for us to say, even if we had great ideas, which I'm not sure, we're not the sole source of great ideas. Even if we had a really clear, detailed plan, it's not going to work for each of those institutions because they're all different. So what we've asked those institutions to do, and we've provided a little bit of money to support this, is for them to think about their institution and how can they best engage their students to develop the student's sense of identity, agency, and purpose, which will ultimately lead to this feeling of well-being, this lifelong experience of life of well-being. So what we've done, we've asked them to do that. Again, we've given them a little bit of money to do that. And they've gone, each of those institutions have gone out to their faculty, requires the blessing of the president or provost to make sure that the university is actually engaged, is not just one or two people. And then they work with faculty to say, you know, what can we do here? And there's been a wide range of things. For example, there's a program at Arizona State has been very successful. They took their initial project, mini grant project, as we've been calling them, and evolved it into a program called Work Plus, which is really thinking about students' work experience while on campus. How can that be more meaningful to them? How can that be a more enriching experience for them? I mean, students work on just about every university across the country, earn a little bit of extra money, pay off some loans, whatever. But is it really work that's connecting either to what they want to study or to their later life experiences? How do you make that into a better job? That's really pretty impressive. I mentioned University of Michigan Dearborn, and for them, we were very impressed with what they did around the idea of storytelling, particularly for very diverse groups of students coming to campus and not really being sure how they fit into the U.S. in some ways. What does it mean to be in the U.S., be an American? What is this world that they're growing up in? And maybe they're questioning their identity and what it means and their background and how that fits in. So they developed the storytelling project, which is really about thinking in a very positive way about their own identity, what that means for them, what that means for their families. And then, of course, how can that transform what they study and what they do to empower them, to give them agency to pursue the things that they want to do in life. That's incredibly powerful, just incredibly powerful. Other universities have done similar things. A couple others have done a little bit of storytelling. The program that, of course, I know best is the one at Bucknell. And we've really focused on purpose. You know, how do our students find a sense of purpose? And I think one of the things that really surprised us, well, lots of things surprised us, really. We were surprised at how anxious students are to have the conversation. You know, you mentioned that in some sense, students and the world's population in general is connected in some ways. We can connect through social media. We can connect through the internet. We can connect in many different ways through text messaging or whatever across the world instantaneously. But we are not connected to each other in ways that really bring us closer, as it turns out. And I think that we found that in our students. They were anxious to have these conversations about purpose, about finding their purpose while they were students. And one particular example, I was teaching just this past year a course with a colleague of mine, the associate provost here, Joe Tranquillo. And we posed this question to students. What do you want out of your education to help prepare you for the future, for your sense of purpose? And again, we were surprised, maybe not completely, but the students were clearly hungry for those conversations. They were excited to come to class and talk about their experiences, their fears, their doubts about what's going to happen after college, and how they can better internalize what's most important to them. Their careers, of course, are very important, or graduate school, or whatever they're going to do next. I think over time, got a better feeling for the bigger picture. We've talked with those students a lot. In fact, there was just an article that we did for a magazine that the CTE is now supporting called Learning Well, and I can talk about that later. But we just had a student who posted in LinkedIn today about her experiences in the course and how much they meant to her. She's now graduated. She's off in her first job. But that provided her with a place to go on a regular basis to talk to faculty who cared and other students who cared to help her think about her own future, her own sense of identity, agency, and purpose and well-being. Those are the kinds of projects that we are supporting. Those are the kind of projects we're encouraging. And again, not one size fits all. So lots of different institutions are doing things differently.
Rick, anything you'd like to supplement that with?
Well, Keith did a great job of overviewing this project. I'd just like to emphasize a couple things. The Bates Project on Work, I think, is an example of what happens when you mix very diverse institutions to learn from each other. So Bates is very different from Bucknell. It's very different from Arizona State University, for example, and from a number of other schools. They have a charismatic president who just retired recently. Her name is Clayton Spencer. And Clayton came to Bates some 7 or 8 years ago and said, I think we need to talk about what happens after our graduates leave Bates. And she thought that a lot of them were carrying debt and they needed to worry about a job and they needed to think about the math. And Bates is a liberal arts college, and liberal arts colleges don't always welcome conversations about jobs. After a little discussion, they centered on the notion of calling it purposeful work, that every graduate is going to have a career. It's hard to find a student who doesn't imagine that their time in college is going to relate to a career, even if it's not the central discussion. But it's not just about a paycheck. It could be about something that brings purpose and meaning. With some iterations and a few experiments, they developed a project called Purposeful Work, and they had it assessed by Gallup, which just sort of blew the roof off. The Gallup data shows that their intervention increases well-being among their alumni by a factor of 10. This is an order of magnitude increase in well-being for the graduates at Bates. The intervention is pretty modest. It really amounts to finding a way for every student to shadow a recent alum in a career similar to what they might imagine themselves doing for a month or two sometime before they graduate, and bringing back recent alumni to talk about their transition from the college to the next step during a one-day kind of, here's what I did with my college education, and talking to the faculty about being reasonable in their expectations about what it means to be a graduate of your institution. So, for example, it's common for faculty to have high ideals, to want students, for example, to address climate change or to address social justice and big issues. But in order to impress the faculty and make them proud of you, students can get the message that I need to never drive a car again because that causes carbon in the atmosphere. So I'm going to have to always ride a bicycle. oh, and I probably shouldn't make a really big income because, you know, maybe that has corruption associated with it and says something about your character. Maybe I need to move to Africa and work in a village and just work on agricultural interventions. If I actually go to work for a bank and, you know, they're going to be disappointed in me. Of course, I'm being really hyperbolic about this.
Right.
But the point is that you can inspire students a bit more by acknowledging that their career can be something that you see around you every day. It doesn't have to be something way out of the norm and still be something that's honored and respected and makes a really positive impact in life. So anyway, those three things. And they were picked up at Bucknell. You heard Keith talk about it in their environment. Arizona State picked it up and it resulted in the Work Plus program. This whole notion of doing a better job of integrating what happens after college with what happens in the classroom, honoring them, integrating them as a learning experience has been transformational to a lot of what we do. I'd like to add just one other thing, just because your listeners probably want to know. So exactly what is involved in being involved in this and making it work?
Yes.
We basically are, you know, this is a work in progress, but our formulation at this point in time is that every member of our institution is involved in a three-stage intervention. Number one, and this is something we might learn from community colleges that needs to be addressed, but number one, it's faculty-driven intervention in undergraduate education. Think of this as an experiment aimed at looking to improve general education on your campus. On every campus that I've worked on, those decisions about general education are not made without the faculty being in the center of the conversation. This is quite different, by the way, from the way it happens in K-12, where I have a daughter who's been deeply involved in that for a long time. K-12 curricular changes are often made in the boardroom and announced to the faculty. If you're teaching at the University of California or USC, it doesn't happen that way. Right. If the faculty senate doesn't lead the discussion, it's not going to happen. So we've been starting with faculty-driven interventions. So you have to have conversations with faculty. Number two, these interventions are designed to address, as Keith said, evidence-based changes that improve long-term outcomes. And the evidence we have today from the Gallup data is that changing their sense of identity, that is, who are you today and how did you get that way? Do I belong here and why do I belong here? And your sense of agency, a can-do spirit, a sort of growth mindset in the Carol Dweck sense. And finally, a sense of purpose and meaning. Those three things. How would you do that at your community college, for example? Could you start with a pilot project that only had 50 students and had some goals that you wanted to measure to see if it worked? But number two, these interventions are intended to scale to every student on campus. These are not intended to be limited to a special population of some kind, but something that all students could benefit from. That, for example, is the reason why we almost always have to engage with presidents and provosts, because you don't change the entire institutional strategy about education without their leadership and their engagement. And finally, the projects are all aimed not at increasing the graduation rate or the retention rate, as important as those are, but they're primarily aimed at enhancing the long-term well-being of your alumni. What we hope will happen is that in the end, alumni and their families will immediately nod their head and say, my college experience changed my life for the better. I will recommend to everyone I know that they should take a path like this because it will lead to a much more fulfilling and flourishing life. And we also, maybe this is because we're engineers, I don't know, but we believe that if you are really serious about things, you're going to assess it, you're going to measure it, and you're going to live by the data that comes out. It's not enough to imagine that this is a good idea and to be satisfied with two or three students who tell you good things at the end. You need to measure the statistics. So we have a project with Gallup. We've hired Gallup to help us develop an adaptation of their metric and make it available to every member of our institution at a reduced rate. So they have a benchmark that they can use to determine whether the interventions are working.
So if I'm a California Community College chancellor, faculty member, president, and I've listened to this podcast and I'm very interested in learning more about this, perhaps for my college or district, what would I do?
Yeah, and I can start that. We can certainly add to it as well. So we have a website. The address is thecte.org, thecte.org. And there's a lot of really good information there about some of the origins of the CTE, some of the institutions that involve some of the projects that we've talked about. And in particular, there's a tab that you can click on, which will tell you what's necessary for a membership and affiliation, what's required for that. I would also encourage people who go to the website to look at some of the conferences that we've had. We've had two conferences over the last couple of years where we brought together the members and many others, people who are interested in what we're doing. And we've had wonderful speakers. For example, we had our second national conference this past spring. We had Bob Waldinger from Harvard, who was talking about some of the things that he's learned from the Harvard study of adult development, which led to the recent publication of a book called The Good Life, which is a great book if you ever have a chance to look at it and read it. One of the things I like to share about that is that, and one of the things that he shares about it, in fact, he did at our national conference, is that it's really not so complicated. He's got a nice long book and he's got lots of evidence to build on what Rick was saying. It's one case where they've been taking data for so long, for over so many people, that they really can draw really strong correlations between the lives that people have lived and how they felt about them and how their health was and how their mental health was, et cetera. And what he found, of course, was that what makes people's lives the best, like what gives them the good life, what gives them a sense of satisfaction and well-being, are the relationships that they experience within it. And the thing that was really interesting for me, of course, you expect relationships, it's that social aspect of well-being, to be very important. It's not just your spouse. It's not just your immediate family. It's not just the people that you are with on a daily basis. It's the people that you interact with in your broader ecosphere of people in your life. So it could be the mailman that you talk to every once in a while. It could be the person whose services a system of your house, or it could be the people for our students. It could be the people that they encounter in the dining halls. So it's the relationships that build the fabric of a good life. And we had Bob come and talk about that. It was fabulous. We had Bill Burnett from Stanford talking about his experiences with Designing Your Life, which is a Stanford program that's been going on for a number of years and he publicized. And those are all recorded on our website, to your question. If people want to really experience what it's like to be part of our conferences, they can actually listen to almost all aspects of them and get a sense of that. And of course, we encourage them to pay attention to our publications. We recently launched, I mentioned before, a magazine called Learning Well. It's a joint venture with the Mary Christie Institute. We've been really privileged to work with the executive director of the Mary Christie Institute, Marjorie Malpighi, who was attracted to the CTE and to our work. And I should say that Mary Christie Institute is really one of the foremost think tanks on student mental health. That's really the focus that they have. And they have a convening every year, which brings together college presidents to talk about these as issues. And not surprisingly, over the last several years, just about every college president is interested in and concerned about student well-being. And Marjorie came to us and suggested that we could form a joint venture and really start to get more information about not only student health, but well-being and what is happening across the country and maybe to some extent across the world related to improving student mental health and student well-being by creating an assemblage of articles and publishing them on a regular basis as a magazine called Learning Well. So that's available as well, learningwell.org, I believe. And you can find the magazine, you can find all the articles there, and then subscribe to that and get that on a regular basis. And we are also, for people who are interested, we have a newsletter that we're sending out to members and interested others. We encourage people to pay attention to the national conference that we will be having again this coming, probably next March, February or March. And then if they're interested in attend and reach out to us directly. Rick and I really enjoy the conversations that we have had with yourself, or as an example, where people who have gone to the website and just clicked on more information, and then that generates an email to us. And then we reach back and say, we would love to talk to you. We'd love to hear about your own experiences, your challenges, how we can help, how we can learn, and then continue on from there in terms of the greater involvement in the coalition.
Fantastic. And when we alert our members about this podcast, we will include the links to Learning Well and to the coalition. So we're running out of time. So Rick, anything you want to add to that? Again, speaking to California Community College, leaders and hopefully some students and others, but primarily the leaders of the institutions and the trustees, the locally elected trustee members of the boards, anything else in terms of them connecting with the work that the coalition is doing.
Let me return to my California roots and say I spent my first 40 plus years in California. I spent 13 years on the faculty of the University of Southern California in LA. I spent 4 years at the University of California at Santa Barbara. I'm a fourth generation farmer from Central California. My wife has an Associate of Arts degree from Fresno City College. Another member of our steering committee, Tom Katsoulias, who was the president of University of Connecticut most recently, has his start at Santa Monica Community College.
Fantastic.
We've had quite a lot of engagement there.
Wonderful.
One of the things I think we need to remember is what unites us, what brings us together. Why would people from Harvard want to work with people in a community college in California? Well, I think the reason that we do is because our fundamental mission is the same. We've gotten, I think, a little confused in higher ed about priorities, at least particularly at the elite institutions. But what unites us, in fact, is printed on a plaque that I have on my wall. And I happen to have a copy of it here. Let's see if I can get it centered. And it's basically a quote from the founding of the AACNU, Association of American Colleges and Universities. Mm-hmm. It says, "Your men and women who are teaching are not fundamentally teachers of subjects. They're fundamentally teachers of persons. And the great passion of the teacher should not be the passion of the language that he teaches or the literature that he teaches, but the passion of the life that he is shaping with the language and the literature." I think that's as true in a community college as it is at Harvard. This is what brings us together. I'm hoping that we will resonate around this common mission, learn from each other, and inspire the next generation. One of the overwhelming problems that I've seen as we talk to particularly presidents who see mental health as an exploding problem on the horizon and the increasing problem of just trying to get ahead of it by hiring more and more and more counselors for individual students is that students feel overwhelmed today. They feel the world is out of control and that there's not much they can do about it. And these are, of course, accelerated by social media. So all you need to do is look at COVID, look at what's happening in Ukraine, look at the problems with the presidential election on the horizon. What can you do about this in your environment? In order to deal with that, they never needed more than they do now, a sense of mentorship, a sense of inspiration from people who've been down this path. And it's going to take research, education, and knowledge in order to steer the ship going forward. So we've never needed it more than we do now. And the public is losing faith in what higher education does for society. We need to change the conversation and to move it in the right direction. And I think it's about being teachers.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's very well said. And this is very exciting. And so, you know, Dr. Richard Miller, Dr. Keith Buffington, the Coalition for Transformational Education, thank you so very much for spending time with us. And I promise you that I will remain in contact because I look forward to connecting you with some of our colleagues at the California Community Colleges and wish you both all the best for this work. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for your leadership. And we're delighted to be partners with you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us for the next Leading Community Colleges in California podcast for more inspiring conversations with California Community College leaders on their own professional and personal journeys and on the most significant and challenging issues confronting leaders in higher education today.